Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. As has been said, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind, and it's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. Please just keep that open mind. In so doing, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today I have as my guest Lisa Marie Keller, and she wants to live in a world where it's commonplace to dance to life. She's a pain management specialist, and she's been resolving her patients' pain for over 13 years. Following 7 years of physical therapy schooling and many more at the School of Hard Knocks resolving her own pain, she became the queen of conquering pain. When she's not pondering on how to solve pain, you can find her dancing to music played much too loud, making snobby comments about wine, and fantasizing about travel. Sounds good to me. And her first book is called Free My Back, which hit Amazon in August of last year. So I'd like to welcome Lisa. Lisa, how are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me, where are you fantasizing about traveling to this time of year?
Oh, anywhere with sunshine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've got some.
Do you do a lot of traveling?
Planning a trip to Italy next year, so I'm hoping to be joining them on that trip.
Oh, nice. Where in Italy?
Tuscany.
Very nice. Well,
yeah, I love the food.
I'm jealous.
I'm addicted to Italian food.
Well, we'll talk more about travel later. Let's get down to the nuts and bolts. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
Well, I've been a PT for about 14 years now. And along with that, I had my own path of healing my own pain using the School of Hard Knocks. And that has been happening for probably about 22 years. So, I've had fair amount of experience with pain. I just published my book, like you had said, last August, which includes the 7 steps to freedom from chronic back pain. And it's the 7 steps that I use to help my patients get better, and it's the 7 steps that I use for myself to get better, to get out of chronic back pain. I've considered myself a specialist in alleviating specifically chronic back pain for more than 7 years, and I finally decided to follow the encouragement of other people to put that information into a book and let people follow that guidance. And that's where I decided to publish that book last August, I think it was.
Great.
And so that lets other people be empowered in taking charge of their health and their pain and helping to solve it themselves.
How do you empower people to take and conquer their own pain?
I use a variety of different strategies. I've obviously been born out of the traditional medical system, but prior to that, I had a significant amount of experience in non-traditional methods of healing and figuring out the body. I had mono. My mom had chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, Epstein-Barr, all the all the different fatigue syndromes that's out there. She had all of them, and I had mono. And the doctors pretty much said there's nothing that they could do for us. So we started looking into all of the non-traditional methods of healing way before it was even popular. That was when I was a teenager, before I even stepped into the physical therapy arena. So I got a significant amount of experience in the non-traditional methods, and then was able to balance all of that out with my traditional medical training and then my experience within the medical system. So it gave me a lot of discrimination in figuring out what was good and what wasn't good pretty easily, which worked to my advantage and worked to the advantage of everybody I worked with, actually.
So how did you actually get started in the chronic pain field as opposed to just traditional physical therapy?
I actually got started without really even thinking about it. I just kind of fell into a job. And the job was in a chronic pain clinic. It was my first job out of school. I was the only therapist in there. And I worked side by side with a massage therapist, and together we got people better. It was a relatively challenging environment, though over time I got very used to it, and the idea of people being in pain no longer scared me, as it does when you're an initial therapist and someone, you know, is in pain and you're afraid to touch them. I got a significant amount of confidence working with that from that clinic. And I have to say, just about every one of my patients got some level of better. Some maybe only got 20% better, and others got, you know, maybe 80% better. All of it was a significant achievement for each and every one of them, because that clinic many times was the last stop for them. They've tried so many different things, and that was the last stop on the road to figuring out what they can do. And after that experience, it just gave me a lot of confidence in working with that, with people with chronic pain. And I didn't even realize that had scared other therapists until I started working in other environments, and they didn't know what to do with people with chronic pain. And I honestly didn't even realize the value of it until I worked in a acute care clinic where I got people who were just injured maybe that day or a couple days before that week. And I kept complicating the situation and trying to implement my strategies that I used for the chronic pain. And I got to say, I wasn't overly successful, and I got kind of frustrated. I was lost, and I didn't know what to do with them. Granted, it's really simple. All you do is ice and some basic stretches, but I kept trying to complicate it. And that's when I really realized that I had a very unique skill set in managing chronic pain, because that's those specific strategies that I was trying to implement with people just didn't work for people that just injured themselves.
What is the difference between chronic pain and acute pain? How can you differentiate that?
Chronic pain, I say, is longer than 3 or 6 months, usually 6 months. If you just injured yourself a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that would still be considered an acute injury. But anything over 3 months and definitely over 6 months is considered chronic pain, especially if it's unrelenting.
And what are the
it's just constant.
What are the challenges that chronic pain patients bring to you?
There's a lot of mental, emotional attachment to the pain sometimes. That was the biggest challenge for me, to kind of figure out how to unravel the mental, emotional side of it that doesn't even affect anybody with an acute injury. Usually, their lifestyle adapts to chronic pain. and they have a hard time seeing themselves out of pain. And that's a big part of it, too. You've got to be able to see your goal to be able to get there.
Mm,
so that
sense.
Was probably the biggest challenge, is trying to convince people on a much deeper level the pain can change.
Now, you use a 7-step system for back pain. How can listeners decide whether or not your system is the right plan for them?
Well, one of the big ones is they have to be open-minded, which you kind of addressed already earlier, I guess. So I guess all of your listeners are very open-minded, since I do bring in non-traditional and traditional methods. There's parts of it that you need to be pretty open-minded for. And the other part is it has to be chronic pain. So you have to be dealing with pain for more than, 3 to 6 months, like we had addressed earlier. System may work, parts of that may work for somebody that just injured themselves, but it's really designed for people that have had pain for more than 3 or 6 months.
So how long did it take you to get to where you are now with your own pain, and what would you say to our listeners who are already feeling tired and frustrated?
For me, it took me probably 3 to 4 years for me to completely resolve my back pain. And right now, currently, I do have an occasional strain these days that goes away relatively quickly. And that's kind of to be expected because I am lifting people in the nursing homes as a therapist. So I do a lot of wear and tear on my own back. So I don't necessarily consider that a problem because it goes away and I can manage it and it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it did take me 3 to 4 years because I didn't have a system and there was a whole lot of trial and error when I, go to bed with pain, wake up with pain, sometimes made it hard to get out of bed, made it hard to do a lot of stuff. It was a lot of trial and error for me to figure out what would make it better and what didn't work. And I've got to say that it was a very frustrating and a very humbling experience, especially since when I went to work, I was responsible to be getting other people out of pain. And when I was having difficulty managing my own pain, it really kind of made me doubt a lot of things in that moment.
Yeah.
And it was kind of embarrassing. I tried to hide it as much as I could, and I think I did a pretty good job. My 7-step system was actually born out of that frustration and that aggravation of where I was at and almost out of that embarrassment as well. And had it not been for that frustration, I probably would not have pushed myself as hard in finding the answer to get out of my pain. And I know that it's probably the same for a lot of other people that are in chronic pain. There's a lot of embarrassment. There's a lot of, letting yourself down, letting other people down, anger, all those emotions that, if used properly, can really push you forward in getting that problem solved. Luckily,
would you like to talk
the process?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No. You continue with your thought. No, I was just going to ask you if you wanted to talk about your 7-step system, but please finish your thought.
Okay. So luckily, the process for anybody who goes through my 7 steps does not have to be as difficult because they actually have a roadmap to use to get where they need to go. Rather than just kind of stabbing in the dark and trying to figure it out themselves. And then your question was what the different 7 steps are?
Yes.
I'm thinking I might want to cover all the seven steps, the end, because there's some specific information that I do want to pass on to everybody, which is part of the seven steps.
Okay.
So I don't want to... I want to make sure I have enough time to cover everything. If that makes any sense.
Okay, absolutely. I just wanted to say I could really relate to chronic back pain. I suffered from it for about 20 years, and it took a long time for me to get out of it, too. And my husband has complex regional pain syndrome. And so I don't know if he would be interested in calling in at some point later on. He's standing nearby, so I'm planting a seed for him. But I wondered what kind of information you wanted to pass on to our listeners today. And if you could just give us a quick walkthrough, that would be great.
Well, one of the main things that I really want to cover today is I want to talk about muscle spasms and how you can get rid of muscle spasms. Because muscle spasms, when you're dealing with pain, it typically goes pretty much hand in hand, especially for back pain. But it's not just for back pain. If you have neck pain, you're going to have spasms in your neck. If you have chronic knee pain, you're going to have spasms going all the way up your leg into your hip. So it's pretty much for any area that you might have chronic pain. So these muscle spasms just plague people with chronic pain, and they end up compounding the pain even more and making it exceptionally difficult to move because you feel like your whole body seized up on top of being in pain.
Mm.
There's actually two main underlying reasons that I have found that cause these muscle spasms to occur, and I'm going to discuss these along with some strategies on how to get rid of these muscle spasms. The first is stress. That is one of the contributors to these muscle spasms, and I know stress is really hard to get rid of in your life, but there's ways to manage how you react to your stress. And then the other one, which many people are not even aware of, is a magnesium deficiency, because magnesium is a natural muscle relaxer, and it's a essential mineral that our bodies need. So if there's a deficiency, it just creates increased muscle tension throughout the body.
Well, I imagine people have to have that tested then to see if they have a magnesium deficiency.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be tested. I've never actually had myself tested. When I started taking the magnesium, I noticed an immediate change in how my muscles felt and how my body felt. Because
really?
I did have a tremendous amount of tension throughout my body, especially in the upper shoulder area, which is where I carried all of my stress. And I was a grinder, too. I would grind my teeth. From the stress and whatever else, you know, the pain maybe. But I would notice that would just help everything kind of relax so that I could, the pain would, it helped the pain, it would help everything.
Would you suggest that people who have chronic pain try taking the magnesium supplement as a course of their treatment?
I do, and that is actually one of the seven steps in the system.
Okay.
And I'm just going to talk briefly about magnesium deficiency. So with magnesium being a natural muscle relaxer, it's super important to get that into your diet, or it just makes all your muscles tighten up. There is a documented deficiency in the U.S. for magnesium already. The main source for magnesium comes from leafy green vegetables. And I know as a whole, vegetables are not one of the most popular things in America for for eating. On top of that, if the mineral's not in the soil, then it's not really going to be in the plant. So you're at the mercy of whoever might be growing your food. And the result of all of that is that there's just a widespread magnesium deficiency that nobody even really recognizes or acknowledges. And when the magnesium is deficient in the body, then the muscles throughout the whole body is tighter than normal. And it just makes it really easy for any painful areas to go just to trigger right over into a muscle spasm.
Hmm. Does organic do organic vegetables contain more magnesium than vegetables that are not grown organically? Do you know?
It's hard to say. It's just a matter of how much of the organic or inorganic fertilizer that they might put into the soil, because they might be using the same land over and over again, produce these crops, and you have to replace it. It's not the way it used to be when we were kids, you know? It was a lot easier to get more nutrients into our vegetables when we were younger. Maybe it's because, you know, everybody had a garden in their backyard and you didn't overgrow on your garden.
Right.
You knew who your local gardener was. You know who your local farmers were. Everybody knew everybody. Mm. There wasn't mass production of anything back then.
Aside from what you've said, what other suggestions do you have for increasing magnesium?
The easiest way to increase the magnesium in the body is using fermentation, obviously. That's the easy one. And I have to say, as a general rule, the liquid form tends to absorb the easiest into the body. And I also recommend to not use the cheapest forms of the magnesium that's available, because magnesium is a rock in the earth. And since the body just can't digest rocks, it needs to be in a form that's more easily assimilated into the body. The cheaper brands tend to use the form of magnesium that is more like a rock. It's still magnesium. You know, they're giving you exactly what they're saying they're giving you. But it might not be very digestible by the body. So I always recommend for people to go through a mid-priced or a higher brand, or a higher-priced, mid- to higher-priced brands. It's not necessarily a very expensive supplement, so still looking for under $20 for a good quality supplement. If you get completely overwhelmed with trying to figure out what you can choose or what's good for your body, if you're familiar with muscle testing, also called applied kinesiology, you can use muscle testing to see which one would be best for your body. Are you familiar with muscle testing?
No, I'm not. What is that?
Okay. That's like a whole other topic in and of itself. When you have muscle testing, you can hold something in your hand and you hold your other arm out. This is the most basic way of doing muscle testing. And someone can push down on your arm. If it makes your body strong, then your arm will stay solid. But if it doesn't work with your energetic system of your body or with your body in general, they're going to be able to push your arm down. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does. I have been through that before, now that you mention it. So
okay.
that lets you know what areas of the body work.
That's a way to test for you, for yourself personally. And there's other there's other ways to do, so you don't have to have somebody with you for every single time. But that's a whole nother topic in and of itself, and I don't want to go off on too many tangents. I want to get the I want to give you guys the information you're here for. But
right.
But yeah, muscle testing. I use muscle testing for all kinds of things. It's a great little trick to see what your body likes and what works for your body and what doesn't work for your body.
What's
and
the difference between? I'm sorry. This is the problem with radio that's not done where we're both in the same room. It's hard to tell when the other person's finished talking. Now, I just wondered if you could tell us what the difference between tight muscles and muscle spasms are.
I'm going to go on to that in just a second because you asked about some other strategies for getting magnesium. And one thing I want to mention is an Epsom salt bath. And what people don't realize, and what I didn't realize until probably about a year and a half ago, is that Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate. So it's another form of magnesium. And the heat of the bath allows the skin to absorb that magnesium a little bit more readily, and it goes right into the muscles right underneath, you know, the fatty layer of your skin. So you get it directed right into that, the muscles, which is very convenient and very nurturing as well, because you're taking time out for yourself and relaxing, which is also, you know, part of stress management, which we'll go into a little bit later. So I also recommend for people to use Epsom salts to help increase the magnesium and help manage their muscle spasms. So now I will go on to your next question, and that was what, about muscle spasms and tight muscles?
Yeah, what's the difference between them? And how do tight muscles contribute to muscle spasms, if at all?
Well, just saying that muscle spasms are tight muscles is too simplistic. It's not totally correct, because even though they are considered tight muscles because they're tighter than the muscles around them, they don't necessarily want to go into spasm when they're too tight. Hold on. I'm not wording that right. When the tight muscles get super hyperactive, that's when they go into a muscle spasm. And it's that hyperactivity that we got to figure out why it gets hyperactive. It's not just a tight muscle. I mean, I can go to the gym and get tight, you know, my muscles will get tight from the workout. Totally different ball game from a muscle spasm. Or if I just go out in the garden and I'm working a little too hard and, you know, my biceps feel really tight. Totally different ball game. A muscle spasm is like ramping it up 10 notches. And it's not just one muscle group. It's like a whole area. You've got the bicep on the front. You've got the tricep on the back. It's the whole area radiating up into the shoulder. It all feels like it's seized up. That's a muscle spasm. So when there's injury or pain, the body naturally tightens up the muscles in the area just to be a natural splint. This is totally natural, and it's the body's way of protecting itself from any further injury. When this protection system goes completely out of control, that's when these muscle spasms occur. And it's like everything just seizes up into the strongest splint you could ever imagine. And the two underlying reasons that cause this natural splinting or protection reaction to go out of control is stress and magnesium deficiency, which we already covered the magnesium deficiency already.
Well, let's talk about stress.
Who doesn't have stress, right?
Well, absolutely. I just remember that the times when my back would flare up would be during very stressful points in my life, so I can so well relate to that. And I'm just wondering what role the stress plays in creating that havoc and what can be done to alleviate it. I'm sure that's a million-dollar question in and of itself.
Yes, it is a million-dollar question. So it's not necessarily a matter of reducing the stress in your life, because it's kind of hard to control that. A lot of those sources of stress are very external, and it is what it is, right? Life happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
However, you need strategies to help improve your body's ability to manage that stress that's happening to you. When your body goes into a fight or flight response, which is what happens when you go into a stressful situation, the tendency is to take short and shallow breaths. It's almost like you hold your breath. Now, the trick is to get out of that fight or flight response. And a really great way of doing that is to take some deep, full breaths to try to break out of that fight or flight response and normalize the nervous system. There's two sides of the nervous system. There's a side that goes into fight or flight, and then there's the relaxation response. When the body is in fight or flight mode, which is the mode of want to run away, there's a tiger running after me, I've got to get away as soon as possible, or I'm just not going to live to see, 3 minutes from now. If you trace that back to the caveman days, there's a whole lot of processes that shut down in the body, because if you don't get away from that tiger, it doesn't really matter. So your digestion slows down or shuts down. Your ability to heal shuts down. So, because it doesn't matter if you've got some rampant cancer cells in your body. It doesn't matter if you've got some bacteria in your body, because if you don't get away from the tiger, those things don't matter at all. So your body shuts down all of those processes so that you can get away as soon as possible. The problem is these days, we never get out of it. So our immune system is chronically suppressed. We can't really heal, which further exacerbates any of these chronic pain issues, because you can't heal it. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. It makes total sense. Well, when you talked about the breathing, that just made me think about the role of meditation and how that's been helpful to me in terms of letting go of stress, is deep breathing with letting go of thoughts, which can contribute to stress. That can bring my body into a more relaxed state so that at least I'm not experiencing that stress. And I can't say that I practiced that back at the time that I was having back problems. I used a strictly physical program to deal with it. And I know that you want to talk about your program at the end. So why don't I just turn it over to you at this point and see if there's anything else you wanted to say on any of the subjects that we covered before we get to that point.
Yeah, I do. I want to kind of go into the breathing, because if you're a novice meditator, meditation also helps amazingly well with stress. But a lot of newbies have a hard time getting into the ability of meditating, especially a lot of the people that I work with on a regular basis. The concept of meditation is very foreign to them. So getting people started with a good breathing technique is very, very effective in helping them to relax, get them out of that fight or flight mode, and get them to start healing again. And I know it sounds way too simple to be true, to just, start taking nice deep breaths to help get rid of muscle spasms and get rid of pain, but it's super effective. So what I want you to do right now is I want you to stop and pay attention to your breathing and notice if it's nice and deep and you're using your full lung capacity, or if you're maybe only using a fraction of your lung capacity to breathe life into your body. Now, the majority of people, when they stop and think about it, they're not using their full lung capacity. They might only be using about 50% of it. So you tell me, David, if you sit there and you pay attention to your breathing, would you say that your breaths are short and shallow, or are they deep and full where you can actually feel your rib cage opening and expanding?
Unless I am doing conscious deep breathing, they are more towards the shallow side. I don't even know if I actually use 50% of my capacity, because when I breathe deeply, I usually breathe to a count of four. And
okay.
My normal breathing is probably twice that rate, so I would imagine that I'm only using half as much capacity.
And that's probably about the same for everybody. So what I want you to do is I want you to sit up nice and straight. Try to get a little bit of an arch in your back. Try to get your shoulders back. And then take some nice, full, deep breaths. If you're slouching forward, it's going to lock down your rib cage so you actually can't open up your lungs fully. So sitting up nice and straight, opening up that chest area, the rib cage area, is going to make it a lot easier to get those deep breaths in. So once you take some nice deep breaths, you should be able to feel how your body starts to relax a little bit. Are you noticing that?
Oh, I can feel it immediately.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So now I have another strategy that can take it even a little bit further. Are you interested in taking a little bit further?
Sure.
Okay. So I just learned that, just figured this out maybe a year ago. It's something that I call sigh-like breathing. So at the end of the day, when you get home from work or you have a stressful day, a lot was on your plate that day, you sit down and you just sigh. And you feel like all of the stress just kind of drains out of your body.
Mm.
And so I started kind of analyzing what a sigh was. And a sigh is just an exhale that's longer than an inhale. For the average person, I teach them to do a 3-second inhale and then a 4-second exhale. You might be able to do, you know, a 5-second inhale and a 7-second exhale if you've been working on your breathing strategies for a while. But the beginners is usually a 3-second inhale and a 4-second exhale. And if you want, I can guide you and your listeners through that right now.
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right, so everyone, I want you to sit up nice and straight. Get your shoulders back, open up your chest. And I'm going to tell you when to inhale and then exhale, okay? Start inhaling, 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, and exhale. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000. And again, inhale. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, and exhale. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000. Do one more. Inhale. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, and exhale. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000. Okay, now tell me how you feel.
I feel totally relaxed.
Almost like you're in a trance, right?
Absolutely. And the nice thing about it is when I'm focused on my breathing, which is the way I started meditating, I let go of my thoughts because all my focus is just on the breathing. And the thoughts can be the bugaboos, which create stress for me. So it's a wonderful technique for letting go physically and mentally.
Awesome. See? I love that technique. And it's just the nice, what I like about it the most is you don't have to be like, you can be a beginner. You don't have to be super evolved with figuring out how to meditate or, you know, all these things. You can be a beginner and learn how to do that. And you can even work into it. Just first work on posture, sitting up straight, and just taking some really deep breaths, getting your lungs to expand all the way, and then take a little bit further and do this, and you can go to the bathroom. If you're having a stressful day at work, go to the bathroom. Sit in the stall and breathe for 3 or 4 minutes, and you'll come out of that bathroom with a new perspective on whatever you're dealing with.
Great.
And that'll help you with your pain, too. Because if overall you feel better, then your pain, you're going to be able to manage your pain a lot better, too. Now, you're not having any pain right now, correct?
No, and the pain that I've been having lately is not related to my back. I've been having some problems with arthritis and tendonitis in my foot, which is affecting my knee. So that's different, and when I'm at rest, I don't feel it. I feel it when I'm walking, and I don't know what to do about that.
Well,
I didn't realize I was talking about my own issues.
I want you to stand up and just kind of march in place and see if it feels any different since you just did that.
Actually, it does.
Because you switched your nervous system over into a different part of your, into the more of the relaxation response, which is actually the healing response. Allows your body to heal better.
Yeah, no, it does feel better. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll have to do a little more deep breathing before I start walking.
There you go. Well, if you incorporate it as part of a lifestyle and just a pattern in what you do through the day, then you'll just feel better whenever you're doing stuff in general.
Yeah.
And sometimes people start feeling better and better every day just from doing that. It might not take the pain away completely, but if you're able to drop it down a couple notches just from breathing, it's free and it's easy, and you can do it anywhere. You can do it in a plane. You can do it in the car. You can do it in your bed. It's so versatile and simple and absolutely free. And there's not too many strategies out there in the healthcare field that's free that I know of, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. And it seems to me that as the focus from the pain is alleviated, then there's less pain connected to it. If that makes any sense. I mean, the freer I feel from the pain, the less I'm going to be focusing on it. That's what I'm trying to say. Because that can exacerbate it. Just thinking about the pain exacerbates it, makes it worse for me.
Yes, it does. It does for everybody. And that is another, you know, that is one of those other subtle, it's not necessarily part of my seven-step system, but when I'm working with people, that is one of the things that I address is start thinking about other things. You know, I try to redirect as much as I can when I'm working with people. Mm-hmm. If they're sitting there constantly talking about the pain, you start talking about other stuff and say, well, is it better than yesterday? Focus on how much better it is than yesterday rather than how bad
it
is today.
That sounds like a very spiritual approach. If that makes any sense. Because you're taking you're taking it out of your body into another realm. And that's why I say that.
It's the mental aspect. That's the mental emotional aspect of healing, which is kind of where I start going out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, there's some strategies that I've had to do. If I did it in the healthcare field, I always tend to do it out, you know, in behind closed doors. You know, I work with them in their room.
Uh-huh.
Because it's not understood and it's not accepted.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Or it's just a coaching process of, you know, how I redirect them when I'm working with them in general.
I'm just curious as to how you came to be accepted using different techniques than what is traditionally used. How did you manage to find somebody that wanted to do what you're doing?
You mean like patient-wise?
Employer-wise. Employer-wise, yeah. I think the patients are open to any help.
I don't advertise a lot of my stuff that I do.
Okay.
When I started learning a lot of this stuff, I had a financial partner and I had my own clinic. I could do whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the show. That unfortunately didn't last forever because he wanted me to see way too much volume than I could do and sufficiently take care of people the way I felt like they needed to be taken care of. So
okay.
I had to step down from that position. And after that, I did a lot of home care. So I'm just in the home with them. So I, again, had free rein to work with them how I felt fit to work with them. And when I work with people in the nursing homes, if I want to bring them into this arena of the mental emotional side, I just work with them in their room. I do a lot of room treatments. So my employer really doesn't have an idea what I'm doing with them, but they get better.
That's all that matters. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. But they get better.
Well,
so
we have about 12 minutes left, so please feel free to talk about your 7-step system if that's what you'd like to do or to describe your book.
I'm going
to turn it over. Yeah.
So the first step is really basic. It's understanding the anatomy of your back. And for anybody to know how to solve something, they need to know what they're working with. So understanding the anatomy in a very simple way is obviously the first step. The second step is getting rid of muscle spasms, a lot of which I covered with you today. Not all of it, but probably 3/4 of that chapter I covered with you today. The next step is retraining the back to move the way it's designed to move. And I call it retraining because I teach people how to push on specific points on the pelvis. And you move through a specific motion going front to back or, you know, moving your hips in specific ways. And it retrains the sacroiliac joint, which is right at the base of your spine, to move the way it's supposed to move. And that is invaluable. That was actually the biggest part, the biggest foundation of the whole system. And it all kind of went from there. And then, of course, I couldn't be a therapist without saying exercise, right? That is the foundation of what I was trained in my schooling. So there are some specific muscles that you need to develop to support your back. And that's the whole next step. And then after that, there's the mental emotional side of pain, which if you're not on board mentally emotionally, which is some of the things that we did briefly cover, then you're going to almost self-sabotage your healing process. You're not going to get the most out of any strategy that's done to you or for you if you aren't on board mentally and emotionally. And the next one after that is finding a good body worker to help support you through the whole process, be it someone who's just a regular massage therapist, or if there's specific things that you need, there's active release, myofascial release, there's a whole bunch of different types of specific body workers, and I go through all of that in the next step. And the last step is using specific tools to resolve your own trigger points, because it can be expensive to have to run out to have someone fix your trigger points. So using tools and knowing how to use them to get rid of your own trigger points is very invaluable as well. So those are the steps.
Well, I know that when we talked before the show, you said that it wouldn't really be practical to discuss exercises on a radio show, and that makes sense to me. But I'm wondering, what are the muscle groups? I'm aware of them, but for those people that aren't, what are the muscle groups that people need to be concerned with when they're dealing with back issues?
The biggest one, it's all core strengthening. And I know that's kind of a term that's used constantly, so I'm going to be really specific here with the specific muscle that needs to be addressed. And it's called the transverse abdominis muscle. It goes through the whole front side of your abdomen. If you put your hands on your hips with the fingers forward, there's a bone right there. And on either side, that muscle attaches from one hip bone to the other hip bone, all the way across the front. And it acts like a natural back brace. Learning to activate that effectively is what's going to get you the support on your back that you need. And then there's other exercises to build on that to get all the muscles in the whole area working synergistically with that transverse abdominis.
So the core primarily deals with the abdomen then?
It does. But there's
mm-hmm.
people mistake the six-pack abs. You know, when you got those nice lines going down your abdomen, that muscle goes vertical. It goes from your rib cage down to the pelvis. It's right in the front. That's not the one you're wanting to activate. It's the one that goes horizontal from hip bone to hip bone. And it's a very important difference. And that is the big thing with being able to strengthen that area. You've got to be able to isolate one muscle from another. And it's one of the biggest mistakes people make, too, is they strengthen the wrong one. They strengthen the six-pack abs. Looks beautiful, but doesn't do much to help you with back pain.
That's interesting. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to say in the time that we have left? Anything that you'd like to point out about your book? And, of course, we've already mentioned it's available on Amazon.com. Is there also some way that people can get in touch with you if they'd like more information?
There's a ton of information on my website, and my website is www.lisamariekeller.com. I have a blog on there that has tons of information on it. I do have information on the muscle spasms in there in video form, I believe, and a lot of just inspirational things, mental, emotional blurbs, and just there's a lot of things on there on my blog that would be worthwhile to anybody that's dealing with pain.
Well, that's great. And Keller, by the way, is spelled K-E-L-L-E-R.
Yes.
Lisa Marie Keller. Okay. Now, you
dance. How much time do we have?
You've got 5 minutes left. Go for it.
Does anybody have any questions? I want to make sure that people get the information that they need. I don't want to just go off on tangents.
You're not going off on tangents. Yeah, we haven't had.
I don't want to
have any
people need.
My husband came into the room when I was not at the computer and said, "You have a caller," and I went over to the computer, and it's just you and me. So we don't have any questions from the audience, and most people listen to this in podcast form, and very few people are brave enough to call in on shows unless they want a free psychic reading. So I can't get to all of them. It's amazing. But unless you are quickly going to announce that you're going to do a psychic reading, I think that it's just a matter of whatever you might have left that you'd like to cover. We do have time, and we can even run a little bit over, so don't worry about the time.
Okay. So I know I gave a tremendous amount of information tonight. So
yes, and it was wonderful.
You might want some guidance on what to implement first. Based on this whole conversation that we've had. And the first thing that I would say to implement is to sit straight, your shoulders back, so that you can actually even allow your resting breathing to be larger and deeper. Because if you slouch, and I invite you to do this right now, if you roll your shoulders forward and try to take a deep breath, you literally can't. Did you try?
I tried. I couldn't.
Yeah, your rib cage will not open up, so your lungs can't open up and get that oxygen in that you need. So the first thing I would say to implement is just sitting up straight. Get those shoulders back so that you can get those deep breaths in. Some people like to have some form of support in their low back to get their shoulders back a little bit better. You can take a towel and roll it up and put it in your low back to get your posture up a little bit straighter. You don't necessarily have to, but some people like that. Once your posture is up and improved, then you're going to be able to get deeper breaths in. And then you can incorporate the magnesium after you've done that. Incorporate the breathing first. Do one thing at a time. If you try to incorporate too many things in, you're not going to know what did what. You're not going to know what helped. And it's just overwhelming. So one strategy at a time. So you could even start just with the posture first for a day, then incorporate the breathing in the next day, and then incorporate the magnesium in, you know, like 4 or 5 days later. So then you have a clear concept of what did what. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. What I'm wondering is, okay, let's pretend that I'm coming out of chronic. When can I safely begin to return to normal activities? How will I know that it's safe for me to dance, for example?
I encourage people, as they start getting out of pain, to start incorporating more activity automatically, just as they are going through life. So maybe before, they would go down the stairs one stair at a time. So I would challenge them to try to go stair over stair instead of one at a time. Just the one thing, and see how they do with it. It might make them feel a little bit worse. Then they need to step back. And then you're always testing your boundaries to see where your boundaries are. And you always want to keep pushing those boundaries, because what your boundaries are today are not necessarily what they're going to be tomorrow or next week or next month. Because as you're healing, those boundaries, hopefully, are going to keep changing. So you're not going to be going from being a couch potato in pain to thinking about going out and dancing. The first thing you're going to be thinking about is can I go walk in the park? It's you gotta stair step it. And automatically, a lot of times, you will start doing more without even realizing it. So if you're in chronic pain and every movement hurts when you're in your back, when you're walking, you're really rigid with your walk. Your shoulders are like rigid. You're not hardly moving and you're taking really short steps. As the pain starts to go away, you're going to start taking longer strides without even thinking about it. And you're going to start incorporating a little bit of rotation in your spine as you're walking. You're not going to think about it. So maybe after you do that, after your pain goes down, you're feeling great, you walked in Walmart, and then you hurt the next day. That's totally normal. You might not realize that you did anything differently, but your body was moving differently for that whole walk in Walmart. So your body has to get used to it, and then 2 days later, you're probably going to be fine. With chronic pain, there's almost always they read it as an exacerbation. They get better, and then they feel like they went backwards. They didn't necessarily go backwards. Their body was just moving differently. So they got more pain. It's like going to a gym and doing a different activity than you have in 6 months. You're going to be a little sore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It sounds like it's important to move forward slowly and to listen to your body, but to not be afraid and to nudge yourself forward, because no pain, no gain.
Exactly.
Mhm.
Exactly.
Well, Lisa, is there anything else you want to leave us with today?
I don't think so. I think I covered a lot.
You did, and I thank you for joining us. It was a very interesting show, and I had no idea that I was going to, of course, I've probably experienced it before after I'd meditated and just not had the awareness that my foot and knee were feeling better, but thank you for drawing my attention to that. I'm going to spend a little more time letting go, and I encourage everybody else to do the same. So thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
And thanks to everybody else. And just remember, have a great week. And whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.